All right, guys, so we are in lesson 9. So we stopped last week to do kind of a supplement lesson talking about hell, Hades, the lake of fire. So we're going to get back into our discussion, and we're back into 1 Peter chapter 4, and we're going to look at verses 1 to 19, and we're going to be talking about, again, the issue of suffering. The issue of suffering. Now, so let's take a look at verses 1 to 6, and we'll see what he's saying here. Since, therefore, Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. So as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. For the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For this is why the gospel is preached even to those who are dead, that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does. All right, so let's take a look here. We're going to talk about a proper attitude towards suffering. All right, so here, first of all, he encourages believers to have the same determined mindset as Jesus. All right, so let's back up for a second. Would everybody agree we all suffer, right? Suffering's just a part of our lives. We get to where we think, oh, something's wrong, what in the world's going on? That's just natural for us to think that way, but the reality is, you're born in this world, it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, it's especially going to be tough and hard. You don't just have the world against you, you have principalities, powers of the air. It's going to be difficult. Now, when we face that kind of stuff that happens, how do we normally respond to it? How do we normally respond? I just take it, George. I don't respond at all. I'm indifferent. Is that how we respond? How do we normally respond when the world turns upside down? Anyone to be honest about it? How do we respond? Panic. Okay, that's good, Tim. You get upset, Rob says. All right. All right, now the honesty comes out. Panic, get upset, Lori. Complain? Who do we complain about? Okay, God? Or everybody and anybody, right? I mean, we just complain, right? Okay. Now, notice what he's wanting us to do here, though. He's saying, as you go through it, and suffering is just part of your life. Okay, there's suffering that happens because of stuff that you do that is a consequence of that, but there's also stuff that happens that you have no control over, and some of it has to do with the fact that you are a believer. What Peter is encouraging us to do here is to have the same mindset as Jesus. Is enter into the suffering with the same mindset as Jesus. Now, does everybody recognize, did Jesus complain? Do you understand? He had a different mindset as he endured, because he was enduring for a reason. You're saying, I don't know that I can do that. Is that possible? That you could be like that? Yeah, but how can you do that? Who's going to help you to have that kind of mindset? Yeah, the Spirit's going to help you. This is what I want you to understand. When God tells you to do something, he's not counting on you to have enough brain power and might to do it on your own, because he knows that you can't. He's calling on you to rely on who? The Spirit, to give you that kind of a mindset. Okay, so here's what he's saying, though. Okay, so when you look at verse 1 and 2, look at what he says there. Whoever has suffered in flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but the will of God. All right, so because of this, because we're suffering for him, he's telling us to do something. So we must stop sinning as we identify ourselves with Jesus who died to sin. We got to make the effort to quit it. Our natural tendency is just to do what everybody else is doing. Have the same attitudes, do the same things, have the same frustrations, engage in the same kind of activities. He's saying, even as you suffer, just stop what you know is wrong. Do what God's calling you to do. Here's the next one. Peter tells us that we have spent enough time sinning before salvation. So basically he said, your sin quota is overflowing. You've already done enough sinning. Would everybody agree with that? Before you got saved, you've already... So, okay, stop. Stop. You've already have enough sin in your life. Stop, okay? So now, look at the reaction of the law. So when you decide to stop, now it's interesting. You would think that people would encourage you, right? You would think that people would say, oh, that's great. You're trying to overcome that. Hang in there, buddy. We're rooting for you. Look at what he says, verse 4. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. So here's the first thing I want you to see, okay? When we talk about it, here's the reaction. Unbelievers think it's strange that you no longer pursue sin in your life. They flat out think that when you stop pursuing these things, something's wrong. You're weird. You're different. Okay, so, all right. Anybody have that experience in their life? Has anybody ever had that happen to you? Anybody want to share how that happened to you? I mean, I can. Okay. I'll share me. Maybe somebody else wants to say, yeah, that happened to me. All right, so I came to Christ at 19. I was a freshman, second semester freshman, engineering student at the University of South Carolina. I drank, I smoked, I cursed. I mean, I just partied. April 1985, I came to Christ. Something changed. My life changed. So I immediately quit the drinking, quit the cursing, and smoking took a little bit because that's a habit, you understand. It took a year. But when I decided, like I had a buddy that was up at Clemson. I was living in Columbia going to the University of South Carolina. When he came home for the weekend, we would always get together and just go out. I mean, this is back in the days of the 80s when you would go to the mall, you know, and hang out at the mall. Do you guys remember hanging out at the mall? You know what I'm saying? It's not like you were shopping. You were just hanging out at the mall. You know what I'm saying? And then afterwards go to somebody had a party here or whatever. But so we got together, and I remember getting into his car, and he already had a red Solo cup there with a rum and Coke ready for me. And I said to him, thanks, man, but I don't think I'm going to do that tonight. And he was like, what is the matter with you? And so then I tried to tell him about the Jesus that was happening. And he was like, what, are you gone weird? What's the matter with you? That's the last time I went out with him when he came home. You know what I'm saying? So that was my experience as a young man. The reality that people think you're nuts if you stop stuff, if you stop doing. And then here's what they not only think you're nuts, they think you're judging them now. And you never even said anything. You know what I'm saying? They think, well, you must be judging them. Well, if that were true, I wouldn't have gone with you in the first place. But I mean, yeah, they think you're nuts. And this is what Peter is saying. How many of you had a similar experience? You don't need to get into the details of it, but you understand what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah, it happens. Okay, now, the results, this results in their speaking evil about believers. They say the craziest stuff about people when they decide to quit doing what everybody else is doing. Now, here's the interesting thing. I didn't make a point of it here. Look at verse 5 and tell me what you think it means. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. This is talking about unbelievers who are mocking believers. What does verse 5 say is going to happen? Yeah, the mocking that they do, they'll have to answer for it. So it's almost like you say, well, I'm enduring this and they're never... No, no, you got to understand. The stuff that you go through, the silly, stupid stuff, the stuff that people say about you will be judged. And they have to give an account. Do you know what I mean? That needs to give us hope. You know, we belong to the Lord and he has a long record. In fact, he's got lots of books. I mean, Revelation chapter 20 says, and the books will be opened. You know, and everything is there. I mean, I think it's interesting. Jesus says in the Gospels, every idle word will be brought into judgment. Wow. Now, do you guys remember any of the dumb things you said this week? Maybe you remember some of them, but do you remember all of them? Yeah, they're going to have to be given account for, okay? Now, look with me at verse 6 now. He's going to talk again about this proper attitude. Look with me at verse 6. For this is why the gospel was preached to those who were dead, that though judged in the flesh the way that people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does. Okay, so here's what I want you to see. The gospel provides hope concerning the believer who has died. All right? When they face judgment in this life, they're experiencing eternal life. This is the point he's making here. This is the reason why we preach. Though, even though we're judged in the flesh, even though people would judge us, we know there's no judgment for us later. Have you ever heard the phrase, I'll just mention it, I don't like to repeat it very often, is like, for believers, this is the hell, the only hell we'll ever experience. You ever heard that? For unbelievers, the hell that's coming is what they'll experience. We won't experience that. This is as worse as it gets for you and I, this life. Do you understand? And this is the point he's making here. Yeah, we're judged in the flesh right now by unbelievers, but in the end, we're not going to be. Do you understand? We're not going to be. We're going to be experiencing eternal life the way God does. That's an awesome thought here. So that brings us now to how are we supposed to act when we go through this stuff, okay? How are we supposed to act? All right, so look with me at verse 7 through 11. Here's what he writes. The end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Whoever speaks as one who speaks oracles of God, whoever serves as one who serves by the strength that God supplies, in order that in everything God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. To him belong glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. All right, let us take a look here. Here's what I want you to notice. First of all, a proper perspective. All right, first part of verse 7. Here's what he says. The end of all things is at hand. So we're to place all things in proper perspective. Is that easy? Huh? Okay, Rob says no. Okay. First of all, do you understand what he's saying? Do you understand what he's saying? Keep everything in proper perspective. What do you think he's saying? All right, look at the big picture. That's good, Tim. What is that? Yeah, this is not all there is. Look beyond where we are now. Anybody else? What do you think he's saying here? All right, not just your consequences, but what? Okay, let me just stop for a moment. Let's be real. What freaks us out each week? I'm not just talking about the personal stuff that happens in your life, but what do we get freaked out by? Do I need to help you? Okay, we look at the larger picture, war and okay, all right. Okay, all right, that's good, John. That's kind of a more of a broad view, so let me give you a practical advantage. You ever get worked up by the news? Bruce doesn't, okay? That's because he's not listening anymore, okay? But do you ever get worked up by what you hear? And then the crazy thing is it may be true, it may not be true. Do you understand with the way things are these days? But we get so worked up, and when we're so convinced that something's supposed to happen, and then it doesn't happen, it's like the end of the world. Do you know what I'm saying? The end of the world, and what are we going to do? Do you have those kind of experiences, or am I the only one that's like that? Do you have those kind of experiences? Okay, you get worked up by anything out of your routine, okay? Well, my routine, Tim, is I like the status quo, okay? Don't mess with the status quo in the world and, you know, just keep the status. And so I get worked up. Here's what he's trying to say to us. Again, this fits with this whole conversation of suffering. Have a bigger picture. Have an eternal perspective. This life here is temporary, and by the way, nobody promised you it was going to be okay. Or somebody was going to help or do whatever. I mean, how history is filled with great leaders, men and women, who were supposed to accomplish something, and then they were what? Cut off. Tragically. Do you understand what I'm saying? Have an eternal perspective. Keep everything. Now, does that mean I got to be plastic and not be upset? No, that's not what he's talking about. He's not calling you to submerge your feelings and so forth. He's calling you to keep everything in a perspective. When you're going through it, you're going to go through it, and you're going to have those emotions and those feelings. But you also got to say, yeah, there's something better coming, and there is somebody who holds to account. And they will be held to account later, and I have to trust in him. I have to have faith in him. This is what he's talking about here, okay? He's talking about place all things in a proper perspective. Okay, now, we are to recognize that we're approaching the end of time. Do you think about that? Do you think about that we're approaching the end of time? Because, by the way, can I explain to you, what all's going on, the bigger picture is, okay, get back to what Tim said, the bigger picture is what's happening with Israel. That's where everything revolves around. It's the Messiah coming back for Israel. And we know from the scriptures, certain things have to take place, which lead to other things. And so when you're paying attention to what's going on, like right now, there's nothing but war, George. Why? Just terrible things, just continuing. Yeah, but do you realize that at some point somebody's going to show up and bring a peace treaty? And when that person establishes that peace treaty, then begins that seven-year period, that final 70th week from Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, which Revelation talks about the Great Tribulation. So by the way, somebody tells you we live in a tribulation now, you can tell them, no, that's not true. How do you know? Is there peace in Israel? No. No, not at all. And so what I want to show you is, listen to me, is keep everything in perspective and be aware we're moving there. And listen, I hope we're not like liberal churches in that we think that everything's going to get better. It isn't. If you know the Bible, is everything going to get better? No. No, it isn't. Because everything's got to move to the day when Jesus Christ will come back. So, okay, now, how do we live then? Okay, he's telling us here, verses 7 through 11, he's going to give us several things that we need to do. All right, first of all, in verse 7, he says, we are to be serious and watchful in our prayers. Serious. Look at what he says there, verse 7. He says, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. So he wants us to be serious in our prayers. He wants us to be self-controlled. So pray. It should be a part of our prayers where we say, Lord, as I'm looking at all this craziness, I know that you're coming, and that's what I'm looking to. I'm looking to you, Lord. Help me to live my life as this all gets crazy. Do you understand? Help me to live my life. Here's the other one. We're to love. Now, he's reiterating something that John, we just saw this in 1 John. Here it is. We need to be marked by an unconditional love towards each other. Now, let me ask you a question. Is this important? It's an obvious question, right? Okay, yeah. Why? Why is this important? Like, all you got to do is look at our world right now. Is there a lot of good feelings going on right now, even in our nation, towards each other? No, in fact, it seems like we've got people whose sole purpose is to amplify the bad feelings, right? Have you noticed that? There are people who are, I mean, through the media, just wanting to amplify animosity towards each other. Animosity towards people who want to do what's right. Animosity. And so we've got a world that is in conflict with each other, not just on the world scene, but even locally, okay? And here he's telling us in our gatherings with each other as believers, we are to what? What are we supposed to do? Yeah, love each other like Jesus loved us. Now, how does that stand out? Does that stand out in comparison to the rest of the world? How does that stand out? That's what it's supposed to be like, right? Where we have a commitment and a concern for each other, an unconditional love for each other. Now, here's the thing. We are to be willing, we are to willingly be hospitable to those in need without complaining. Does everybody understand that one? He didn't just say be hospitable. He said do it without complaining. Does everybody understand what that means? Okay, so let's say I have here a guy sitting in our pew, Bubba, okay? Bubba has some needs. Now, the problem with Bubba is I've been watching Bubba, and sometimes I help Bubba, but sometimes Bubba continually has needs. Like, just like he just makes one bad decision after another. And then Bubba comes, And he doesn't just quite flat out just ask me, but it's obvious that he needs help. And so I'm going to be hospitable and I'm going to try and help him. But then it becomes a continual thing. And knowing me, I may not complain out loud, but I'm a grumbler. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, there's Bubba. I wonder what's going on in Bubba's life today. What am I going to have to do now? Do you understand? That's complaining. I'll help Bubba, and that's being hospitable. Jesus, I helped him. I'm being hospitable. But I'm supposed to do it without what? Complaining. Now, is that easy? No. But that's kind of the rubber meets the road, right? That's almost like being tolerant of people because of their stuff. Now, why do we have to do that? Denny said something earlier about when it came to love, we're to love others as what? Okay, so let me ask you a question. My complaining about Bubba and helping him, even though I'm helping him, and it seems like a continual thing that I've got to, it's like he's not getting it. Come on, Bubba, quit making those crazy decisions. Does God do that with me? Does he? Does he do that with you? Help you even though you continue to make the wrong decisions? He continues to show you love, right? Yeah, aren't you glad he doesn't complain? I mean, he's not in heaven saying, oh, there's George. Why do we have to do this for George again? That's not taking place. Isn't that an awesome thought? So he wants us to be like Christ here. And this is important that we do this if we're going to be this way. Now, we're to be faithful stewards of the spiritual gifts that God has entrusted us with. And he goes through a list of these gifts here. Now, here's the thing. Does everybody understand you have a spiritual gift? You have a spiritual gift. You realize that, right? You may not know what the gift is, but you've been gifted. Now, I know somebody just encouraged me about, you know, maybe you should do spiritual inventories again. I've done spiritual inventories. I've never been a fan of those because I find sometimes that limits people. Because I think you have more than one gift. And those gifts come to the front when you do what God tells you to do. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because it's the enablement of the Spirit that allows you to do it. The point is, recognize that you have been gifted. And use those gifts. You have been gifted. And use those gifts that you were entrusted with. You were entrusted with a spiritual gift. Now use it. Now he talks about several gifts here, okay? He talks about several gifts. Let's take a look here. When we're talking about this, look with me, verse 11. Whoever speaks as one who speaks oracles of God, whoever serves as one who serves by the strength that God supplies, in order that in everything God may be glorified. There he's just talking about two gifts, speaking and serving. But there are also multiple gifts. There are several lists of gifts, and they're not all the same throughout Scripture. Now the point is that here's why we do it, okay? These actions on our part will result in God being glorified. That's what happens. Matt, so let me tell you right now. Okay, I'll give you an illustration. This happened. This has happened. Will continue to happen as long as there are people who do this. So through the years, there have been people who have had needs. And God will move the heart of someone who sees or hears about the need. And they'll come to me and quietly say, hey, George, I want you to give this envelope to this person. Don't tell them who it came from. And I've done that, continue to do that. That happens all the time. So I go and I deliver these envelopes, or I hand these envelopes, or whatever. And I've seen the tears of gratitude. I've seen people, they want to know who it is, and I'll say, no, I can't tell you who it is. And then they'll say, man, God is good. Who is glorified? Yeah. And the person who's doing it, that doesn't want to, they'll be glorified one day. They'll be rewarded one day, right? Because they did it not letting the left hand know what the right hand's doing, right? This is what I want to say. So that person who did that, I can almost guarantee, I can tell you what their gift is. Giving. Or those people, what their gift is. Giving. Do you understand what I'm saying? Doing things like that. I've met another gentleman years ago in the first church. His thing was, as he would hear that people would have a need, he'd go and deliver bags of groceries on their front porch, ring the doorbell, and run away. And they wouldn't know who it was that did that kind of thing. But they were using their gifts. Now, who gets the glory? You know what I'm saying? God. God gets the glory. This is the whole point. You know, so this is how we are to be, even in the midst of our suffering, living for a purpose, having something greater. So, all right, so now, look with me at verses 12 through 19. He's going to talk about how to endure in suffering. Because let's be honest, are you going to suffer? Yeah. Here, look at what he says. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange is happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's suffering, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or a meddler. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. For it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome of those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if the righteous are scarcely saved, what will become of the ungodly and the sinner? Therefore, let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to the faithful Creator while doing good. All right, let's take a look at this. All right, first of all, we're to come to grips with the reality that we will suffer. There is one big assumption in the Bible throughout Genesis, from chapter 3 all the way up to chapter 19 of Revelation, and that is you will suffer, period. You're going to have difficult times, period. Just count on it. Here's the other one. We have joy when we recognize the privilege of suffering as Christ did. You mean I'm going to be happy about it? No. There's a little bit of a difference here between happiness and joy. God's not really concerned about you being happy. He's concerned about you having joy in him. That's what we're talking about, is having joy in him. Here's the blessing. When we suffer for our faith, we will be blessed because God is glorified. He's going to bless you. Now, the problem is we think in terms of blessing with reference to the temporal, what's going on right now. But you need to think in terms beyond that. Think eternally. Do you understand what I'm saying? You need to think eternally. Here's the warning. Peter warns believers not to suffer for their sinful behavior. So there is two types of suffering. There is the suffering that happens, and then there's the suffering that's a result of your bad decisions. Do you understand? Your sin. Now here's the proper attitude. Verse 16, we should not be ashamed about our suffering, but rather have joy. I have seen this illustrated so many times when I go to third world countries and connect with churches there. Think about the joy. We've got to have this kind of a feeling. Rather than being ashamed, not to be ashamed about our suffering, we've got to have joy. God is the one who's in control. And I see that, but somehow we've lost that here in America. We think something's wrong if we're going through difficulties. No, it's just life. Okay, let's go on. Here it is. Here's God's discipline. Suffering purifies the lives of God's people. That's what suffering does. Suffering purifies our lives. Here's what I want you to see, though. While it's purifying our life, Peter points out that the lost will face greater disciplinary action. Where we kind of referred to that earlier, right? This is our time of purification, but later those who are lost are going to face. So here's the call. Those who suffer must commit their lives to the Creator through their actions. So you commit yourself, and what do? You do what's right. You do what's right. That's what he's calling us to. Do what's right. Now, next week we're going to get into chapter 5, and we're going to focus on some responsibilities that we need to have as believers.